Good morning, Napa Valley. Lee W. Miller here. Excited to be back on the radio again. And you might ask, well, when were you on the radio before? And that was a couple of years ago. My buddy Desi Capaz and I had a show, and we talked about real estate. And it was, it was kind of boring. It was boring for us, so we thought, how could it be interesting for our listeners if it was kind of boring for us? I love real estate. It's what I do for a living full time. I'm pretty good at it, and I really get a lot of satisfaction and gratification from helping people. But I don't know if it's necessarily a topic for the radio. Another thing that I am is a kind of a serial networker. I'm obsessed with helping businesses connect with one another, kind of a matchmaker, but not for love, but for business. And as a result, I started Napa Business Advantage. That's a business referral group. I've been the president of the Napa Association of Realtors, and I'm on the Vine Trail board, and I'm pretty passionate about the Vine Trail because I'm wanting to help keep people safe while they're cycling and keep cars off of 29. So why am I here today? I just want to help businesses get exposed to the public. And, you know, we all like doing business with people that we have a connection with. And so if I can bring folks in here and get them on the air, and you can learn about a new business that you're not already aware of and you have a connection with them, then that's going to help you and it's going to help them. And it's going to be hopefully fun and entertaining while we do that. So we're also going to be talking about a variety of different subjects, business related. And the first one, my first guest is going to be Dr. John Kirk. Dr. John Kirk is an OBGYN. I always found that interesting that there's not probably another profession that uses six initials and not a name.
Well, welcome. and thank you for having me as well. To be honest, I think we use large words so that we can get paid more. The larger the word, maybe the more important it is.
One of my first bosses told me that everyone's pay is commensurate with the problems that they solve.
Well, then we should be paid well.
Yes. And have a long, complicated name that uses initials to describe it. So welcome to the studio, John.
Thank you so very much. It's a pleasure.
So we know each other personally.
We do.
Not professionally.
No pap smears for you.
So because I know you personally, I think it's important that the listeners check you out on the air here. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started and how you ended up in Napa.
Well, a circuitous route a bit. I had the pleasure of growing up in Southern California. I was, as my lady of my life tells me, a natural-born surfer. I've actually only surfed twice.
But it sounds so SoCal.
It does sound SoCal. And at the end of the day, I grew up in Newport Beach. My father died when I was young, and I lived with his sister, my aunt Gail. Happy birthday to Gail. She just had her something birthday in the upper levels. But she helped bring me into the real world. I did my formative years in high school there and decided in the Reagan years that I would go into business. I would become a successful businessman of some sort. So ultimately, despite voting for Reagan in my first election, and as it turns out, the only Republican I voted for, although this is not a political show, I suspect, I ended up coming up to Berkeley. I had my first year at college in 1981, and it happened to be the rainiest year they had in 200 years. You can imagine coming from Newport Beach, where, you know, it really doesn't rain, or at least it doesn't seem like it does. Having that kind of an experience made me feel like maybe I didn't do a good job in picking my college. However, the next year was the best year of my life, and it's kind of gotten better and better every year since. So I fell in love with Northern California. I ended up going into investment banking, of all things. I did a boutique.
Talk about exciting.
crazy, right? Yeah. Did a boutique firm, Keefe, Bruett, and Woods. I was fortunate to work in San Francisco, and long story short, about 6 months into that, I realized, man, I did not know what I was doing. I was not interested. There was no soul. There was no humanity in it. I didn't understand really the purpose of moving money and taking a big chunk of it, but for what? Were we making the world better? I didn't think so. So I kept looking, and ultimately I was fortunate to find medicine. I had an epiphany actually one day sitting there, and I got this story painted in my mind that I would become a psychiatrist. Ultimately, I talked too much to be a psychiatrist, but I ended up doing my prereqs, went back, you know, back to school after finishing business school. I went to any school that would take me. I did very well. Ended up going into medicine at Yale in the East Coast, had my little four-year East Coast experience.
That was the only one that would take you?
You know how it is. You know, sometimes you got to scrape the bottom. So I did that. We had a baby. We moved back to California. And then my career got started as a resident at Cedars-Sinai. So I practiced obstetrics and gynecology after Cedars-Sinai down in Southern California for about 3 or 4 years, at which point my wife, we had a winery, and she really made more sense for her and the rest of us to be here in Napa Valley. We came up here, glad that we did. I think it was a great place to raise kids, a safe place to raise kids. And had two beautiful kids. We had the course of the process of finding jobs. Unfortunately, I found a job here at the Queen of the Valley. I started in 2002. I was just amazed at the beautiful things that we were able to do with the patients in Napa Valley and really the surrounding valleys as well, because it seemed that there wasn't as many of us perhaps back then as there are now. But we were able to help people, and it wasn't based on money. It wasn't based on just the economic relationship. It was based on desire to care for somebody, and that just moved me. That was like I knew I had made the right decision. 20 years later, I'm sure of it. So
no, good for you. Beautiful, yeah. Good for you. You know, the part that you talk about having that passion. You know, I spent 27 years in the corporate world, getting on airplanes every Monday, coming home on Thursdays, and quite successful in the sales career of all things telecommunications, and still just, you know, other than the President's Club awards and the plaques and the attaboys and stuff, it was like, it was just something that I did. I can't believe that I did it for so long without having that sense of gratification that I truly have now with helping people acquire or dispose of their most valuable asset. Especially first-time home buyers, to help them through the education process as much as the actual acquisition of a home. It's just night and day, the joy that I receive from that. So we're going to thank you for that background. That kind of helps give the listeners a little connection with you. And, you know, you talked about the Newport Beach to Berkeley, you know, the 180 degrees difference in weather and culture and everything else.
Culture for sure, yeah.
It's night and day. So one of the things that we talked about before the show that we wanted to address here is the business of healthcare. And there's a lot of different topics there that we could hit on, but I'd like to know from you, what are the choices for women giving birth in Napa Valley?
Well, interestingly, we are a pretty small valley. We have about 150,000, 160,000 people here. Maybe half or slightly less live in the county outside of a city limit, and a little more than half within a city limit. But we're a rural county, but we happen to be a very wealthy county, but that's not true for all of us. So there are many patients here, many people here, who don't have the level of income that's required probably to actually pay to live here. So there's a lot of challenges, as I think there are in any community, perhaps more so in some that are warm, where homelessness, for example, is extensive. The challenge of having birth is reflective of where one can do it, right? So we have traditionally hospitals is where most patients will come in and have their babies. We have two hospitals in the Valley. But interestingly, as much as 40% of our patients are having their babies outside of the Napa Valley. And why is that? It's usually economics. It's very expensive to have insurance, as you know. The Kaiser system has a pretty good done a pretty good job, I think, of keeping costs controlled in an area where costs are spiraling out of control. We spend something like 18% of our national budget on healthcare. That's somewhere in the range of $3.7 or more trillion dollars every year. That's more than $10,000 per person, wow. Every person in the country. when we do that, and we have these expensive insurance policies, many patients can't afford them. So in our community, as many in California, I believe there are more than 50 or close to 55% of the deliveries here are being done through Medi-Cal, which is a public service. It's called Medicaid in most states, and here it's Medi-Cal. And that represents many of our community vintner workers and service workers in the restaurant and service trade hotel, where there just isn't enough income, even though we have a full minimum wage and tips in many of those areas, it's just not enough. So the public service takes care, fortunately, of our patients that have pregnancies. So they have a choice to go to a hospital. Two choices, St. Helena Hospital, which is where I work blessedly every day, and Queen of the Valley, where I go sometimes as well to do robotic surgery, for example. But the deliveries are now moving out of the town a little bit more and more. As I said, about 40% going into Kaiser. There's about close to 2%, 1.5 to 2% of our deliveries are happening in the homes. And there are midwives that do those deliveries in homes with patients. Sometimes in other communities, though we don't yet have one, there are birthing centers. Birthing centers are something like a home birth. They offer some of the non-medicated options for women in labor. And they are done in facilities that maybe are close to hospitals in case there's a problem, so that the patient can be brought to a hospital for some acute or emergent need. Fortunately, that doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen, and it's highly unpredictable. So those are the various options, mostly hospitals, some outside of our network, home births, and the ever-present birthing center, which sadly is not yet here in Napa Valley, but I think we may see that change sometime soon.
Well, as a society, we did that quite successfully for millennials. So
That's right.
And I don't know if it's only been the last 100 years or less that we've been, the routine, the standard is, you're going to have a baby, you got to go to the hospital. There's just not, anything else is unsafe, even though we did it very successfully for hundreds and thousands of years. So.
If not millions as humanoids. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
I always say that to the patients that, having a baby is not a disease. It's normal.
Right.
I'm here to help, but at the end of the day, you get to do most of the work. But realistically, the vast majority of problems that occur are very manageable. And when they are much more challenging, sure, it's good to be close to a hospital. And I think that's something that we have to continue to consider as we move forward.
Great. If you're just joining us, we're here with Dr. John Kirk from St. Helena Hospital, an OBGYN. And one of the things that we want to talk about is what's something that there's something about your industry that maybe the average person wouldn't know.
Well, that's an interesting question. Well, we actually never have to get up at night, we just time these. No, that doesn't really work that way. To be honest, I think that we're human. Sometimes people put doctors on pedestals, And I think that it's important to realize that we are just like everyone else. We're just like our patients. We are our patients at times.
And always said to be the worst patients, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do they say? If you're an attorney, you know, and you're representing yourself, you have a fool for a client, you know, that kind of a thing. Yeah. Same thing is probably true in medicine as well. You get biased, and, you know, those things don't necessarily help you make reasonably appropriate, judicious decisions in helping.
Right.
That being said, I really think it's just that we're human. You know, we don't have all the answers. If we do, if we pretend like we do, if we, you know, have that error, that's probably somebody to avoid, you know, to be honest, because we don't know everything. We may know how to find the information, you know, and if we are able to do that for you, that's great. Or point you into the direction, you know, of someone else who may know. That would be sort of a referral. But
a recommendation, but it's not, sure. You know, you see, but you're one of the most humble men that I know.
And then don't know.
And then you put
my
that
off. My girlfriend may not say that. I don't know.
No, Cynthia would, if she's in a good mood. But you're also a doctor on top of that. So you take that humility and the incredible degree that you know, the comment you made about, you know, people put you on a pedestal, I think that was almost done by your community for a certain desired goal. And you're not part of that. You don't care about that because you are humble. It's like, you know, back in the 40s and the 50s, remember a pilot was like, you know,
next to godliness.
Yes. And
well, they're flying
literally, yes.
Right?
And then below a pilot was a doctor kind of a thing. And, you know, now I think a medical professional is the creme de la creme of, you know, the reputation and the respect. And, you know, hey, you earned it. That's not everybody could do that. If they told me, Lee, you have to be a doctor, well, give me 25 years to go through med school, and I've taken every class four times, I might get there.
It was an interesting experience because it was the last thing on my mind when I went to business school at all. But I have been so blessed to be able to do this. It's truly a process where each moment, every moment, is just filled with joy and love.
Yeah.
Even when it's hard, I may get frustrated. But I get through that really quickly, and then I realize why I'm there. You walk into the door, and the whole thing changes. A smile pops up. And fortunately, even though they're patients that are coming to see me for problems, they usually smile, too.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes it so much easier.
Yeah. So another question that I don't think this is going to come as a surprise to you, because we did kind of talk about this a little bit, but what are the biggest challenges facing healthcare in general? And I know that you could probably talk about that for millennia.
And I have like 6 seconds, right?
Yeah. In our last 15 seconds, no. We've got a few minutes left. Just pick one and talk about that for a couple of minutes. One of the biggest challenges.
Well, I think the global issue is economics of medicine. I mean, you have to, you know, you're either dead or you have to realize that that's one of the major issues. If anyone watched the debates with the Democratic, I guess, third debate last night, the discussion was largely around access to healthcare and the economics of healthcare and what should happen with healthcare. And I can't say that I have an absolute answer for that. I certainly have my thoughts, like we all do. But the economics in America of healthcare are untenable for the long term. Now, we've been saying that for quite some time, and we've seen the growth exceed inflation every year, essentially, in healthcare spending. There's been some improvements during the Obamacare years, however one feels about that process. There was some net growth decrease in expenses. There were increased access, which is, of course, another major issue. But the costs are prohibitive. I was speaking earlier to Julissa and company about the expenses of hospitals and the building of a hospital bed costing more than $1 million per bed in California. That same expense in Seattle is $600,000 per bed. They're both on the same type of earthquake requirements. It's just we have a much stricter and not necessarily better policy in California that costs a great deal more. It's going to be significant in 2030, where almost all of the hospitals will have to rebuild their infrastructures to support the current seismic guidelines at that time. So for an example,
they're not grandfathered in?
No grandfathers. No, unfortunately, these are hard and fast. And they've actually pushed the years forward over time. That may still happen. One could imagine that. But it seems like it's pretty hard and fast. An example, our hospital, we have about, for all practical purposes, about 70 to 80 beds that are used regularly. We have a larger hospital than that up in St. Helena. But essentially, none of those beds will be available in the future in 10 years. They will be removed and a new structure will be built. What are we going to do? We have 70 to 80 beds now. We're going to go to 30 beds, 35 beds, something in that realm. It's not written in stone, but where do the patients go? Well, realistically, they've done their analysis. We only need 12 beds. 12 beds right now for inpatient services at St. Helena. Why? Because there's so many other options for patients. Going home day one of surgery, 93% of my patients go home day one of surgery. They don't spend the night. That's a change, a massive change. They get discharged from their cardiac surgery, go to the ICU, which of course will have an ICU in the future too, and then they get discharged out of the hospital to a step-down acute care unit that doesn't have the same oversights or the same requirements or the same economics. So cutting costs in the future, creating smaller, more specialized venues is going to be a trend. Almost certainly, it already is. Increasing technology. We've all heard of robotic surgery, one of my great passions as well. That, along with other technology like telehealth, where patients are communicating by screen, like you can imagine doing FaceTime, right?
Yeah.
In fact, FaceTime is used now, Skype is used now for many different kinds of visits, particularly mental health care, and even counseling, just general counseling is increasingly doing it. And we do it to a great deal up in St. Helena as well. So there's going to be a lot of changes, but the economics will be and will continue to be the biggest challenges for us.
Interesting. Okay, I lied. One more question.
Perfect.
Because you've mentioned the robotic surgery a couple of times, and I chuckled to myself that, you see, we've all heard of robotic surgery. Well, you have. And, you know, I've seen various things, various programs or whatever on TV that talk about that, but not necessarily in obstetrics and gynecology. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we're still working on the robotic C-section and the robotic vaginal delivery. I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, right.
And I hope our women are not holding their breath either. We're not looking forward to doing that. Robotics and servo control, motor control for movements, the goal really ultimately is to decrease variability. So if you're moving during surgery, that movement is imperative, right? There's an art and a science to the process of doing surgery. If you have less variable movements, less extraneous movements, and better servo controls, if you imagine moving your arm, the dexterity of your wrist, if you can do that with better control, with magnification in a three-dimensional environment, you sort of have almost reproduced the open surgery concept where you can look, see, touch, feel, except for the feel and touch part. And even that, called haptics, is coming on stream now with new systems, new control systems for robotics for surgery.
And what's haptics?
Haptics are basically the ability to feel, sense, or touch, whereas you can imagine doing robotic surgery where you're sitting at a console 20 feet away or in another room or even in another country, believe it or not. You can do surgery on a patient through the internet, through optic fibers. That control is being done by a robot at the site of the bed, but you're sitting somewhere else. So you can create any number of, think about the video games that we see and the incredible graphics and the incredible overlays and processes.
Right.
Well, you can do all of that in a patient. You can take an MRI of a patient's abdomen that has a tumor or some other mass that has to be removed, overlay it, and adjust its size to fit the actual image that you see, and it will be able to show you exactly where the depths, the problems exist so that you can go and access them. And then as you cut, it will show you how much you're cutting. It's it's truly an amazing vehicle. I'm just talking about one robot, but we have robots for knees, the Mako system. There are many others. We have robots for neurosurgery, drilling holes. We have robots that simply help hold an instrument. And then robots like the Da Vinci platform, which is what I'm used to. We have at the Queen, and apparently we will be acquiring one soon at St. Helena too, that help us do the whole surgery. So it's going to continue. There's a lot of pushback because the expense, they're not cheap. And there's
neither are people.
That's true. And that's part of the reason why we have such an expensive system, is that there's always that pushback. You know, we want to take care of everybody, and we want to do the best we can. And sometimes that's a debate. You know, what is that?
Right. Well, I look forward to having you back on, and let's talk more about the business of healthcare. I remember recently hearing somebody talk about the reason that healthcare is so expensive is because no one cares how much things cost, because it's not insured like your automobile. If your auto insurance included your oil change, you'd take it into the dealer and you'd say, change my oil. And that oil change might be $500, and you go, I don't care.
That's an expensive oil change.
Yeah, that is. But if it was included in the insurance versus having the free market compete and keep things more competitive.
And who wants to pay for it? You know, nobody really wants to pay for healthcare. You just want to have it. You want it to be there when you need it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You don't want to get sick, right?
Exactly.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you again. And everybody, that was Dr. John Kirk. And we're talking about making John a regular, maybe come back a couple of times a month.
That could be frightening.
Yeah.
I would enjoy that very much. Great to be with you, Lee. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We will be right back after this message from our sponsor.
As Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
We are KVON Napa.
This is Barry Martin. Join me weekdays for the KVON Morning Show.
This is Auntie Dorothy Salmon, and today in the Napa Valley.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Doris Gentry.
Hi, this is Judd, the Fink Finkelstein, Judd's Napa Valley Show.
This is a sports report with Ira C. Smith.
Hi, this is Hank Hardister.
And Mr. Lauren Mole.
Now, Napa Valley's ambassador of good times and fine wines.
Hi, I'm Jeff Davis, host of On the Wine Road.
Nicolás de Luna de Aro, every Sunday morning on KVON 1440 AM.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM.
Follow us on Facebook.
For podcast and broadcasting schedules, go to our website, kvon.com.
Okay, welcome back. That was really interesting having John in studio. And we think we've got a lot more things that we can talk about going forward. And I failed to previously tease that the lovely Laura Gomez was going to be in studio. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me on your show.
If you don't know who Laura Gomez is, you're about to get to know her. And she is the best esthetician in all of Napa. But you're more than an esthetician. You are a skin therapist. That's a great term. And knowing you, I know why there's a difference in your opinion. So let's have our listeners just get to know you a little bit, Laura. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sorry, I was just adjusting my mic here.
There you go. Gotta be heard.
Okay, so my name's Laura Gomez. I'm actually a Mexican American, I was born in Autlan, Jalisco. If any of you know where that is, that's actually a very small town in Mexico that, do you guys know Carlos Santana?
Oh, who doesn't?
Oh, yeah. That Carlos Santana was born there. So we have a Santana Park and Santana drugstores, and it's really cool. But let's see. I was brought to the U.S. when I was one. I've lived all over California and mainly the Bay Area. I love the Bay Area. I'm a Bay Area girl. I actually used to live in Stockton, and I went to UC Davis. So I was trying to study. It's really cool that the doctor's here because I wanted to study medicine as well. I went to UC Davis for about a year and a half, but then my father was deported. It forced my mother and I to take care of the house and take care of their businesses. And so it kind of forced me to drop out of school, and I dropped out of college, helped my mom a little bit. I went to community college to try to get some classes out the way, and you know. Real soon after that, my mother and I then got a lawyer order of deportation. So then my mother and I needed to leave. Thankfully, we were able to fight that, and we left voluntarily, which means that we can come back when we wanted in a legal way. I moved to Mexico. And then in Mexico, I was an English teacher. So that was really cool because I got to... it was just rewarding teaching people something that they've never known and speaking to someone in one language, and then in 3 years, they're totally talking to you in another language. You know, it's so cool to see that. A few years after that, I fought my way back to the States and I came back home. And although I still love medicine, I decided to study skin therapy. And the reason for that was just because I've always been into skincare. I've always been in my makeup and my skin have always been one of my biggest regimes in the morning, and so I started doing that, and it was very close to medicine. You know, it's your skin is the largest organ, and
I was just going to say that and steal your thunder, but
yeah,
I resisted.
Don't steal my thunder. A lot of the times, like if your skin has a reaction on it, if there's some kind of flare up on it, there's most likely a flare up in some other organ inside of you, and it's just not working properly. So. When I found that connection of skin with the rest of the body, I was like, "Ah, this is cool. This is what I want to study."
Right. How long have you been in this profession now?
I've probably done this for 3 years now.
Okay.
I went to Paul Mitchell the school. As soon as I got back from Mexico, I went straight into Paul Mitchell. I took the aesthetics course there. I graduated on Dean's List.
Nice.
Had honors in skin and in makeup. I went off to Napa. That's where I ended up in Napa. My sister was already living here, so I moved out here with her. And
you didn't just get a job. You are an entrepreneur, and you opened up your own practice.
Yeah, I moved out here and I went straight to Ulta. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ulta. Ulta is just a makeup store. I went in there as a brow expert. So I was in there waxing eyebrows. And after just a year, I ended up getting enough clients to follow me. And I went off, and ever since I was, I remember being in third grade, my parents and I went to LA, and we bought this, like, big pack of, like, it was, like, pens and pencils with, like, cute little, like, I don't know, it was, like, cartoon stuff, and I'd go back to school, and I'd sell it for a dollar.
Oh.
And so I've always been an entrepreneur.
Buy low, sell high.
And so I left Ulta and opened up my own little practice. And soon after that, I got certified in holistic therapy.
So is that one of the ways, one of the factors that differentiates your practice from most other skin therapists?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it does. There's a lot of estheticians out there. There's a lot of spas out there. But like one of my friends told me, friend client of mine, she is she's well off. She goes to different hotels all the time and travels to many different places, and she's gotten facials at a lot of different super luxurious spas, and she's like, they just put crap on my face and like call it a day, you know. And here it's definitely not like that. I remember what it was like to get my very first facial and to feel like, whoa, this is what your skin's supposed to feel like. This is what your skin's supposed to look like. And so I make sure I give that to my clients. And then on top of that, I don't just tell you, yes, go ahead and put all of this stuff on your face and you're gonna be just fine in a couple of weeks. Like, we talk about holistic means you look at the whole body as a whole unit. You can't just look at skin as one organ and treat it separately. So, you know, we look at, well, how are your stress levels? And, well, what are you eating? Okay, well, look, these is what's affecting your acne, or these foods, or these products is probably agitating your eczema, or whatever it could be. And so we look a little bit further than just products. You know, we talk about what kind of lifestyle change we must do to really get the full benefit of the skin treatment that we're about to give you.
Because the skin absorbs whatever you put on it.
Yes, and so it absorbs a lot of stuff that you put on it, depending on the molecule size, of course, but yes, it absorbs a lot of stuff.
So going from one esthetician to another, there's a night and day difference as to what they're putting on your face.
Oh, yeah.
And it might, the stuff that's got a lot of chemicals in it, it might do the job. It might make your skin look wonderful, then there's something else going on there as well.
Yeah. The reason why I care so much about not using harmful chemicals, because mind you, the chemicals are all over the place. Water is a chemical, okay? So, but there's really harmful chemicals out there. And when I started aesthetics, I thought, okay, well, just like our food, products are also regulated, you know? That I was thinking like, okay, if I go into Ulta and I buy Tarte used to be one of my favorite brands, I'm good, you know? I'm buying this wonderful brand that's supposed to be natural, it's supposed to be all of this, but then when you actually look deep into the actual industry, there's no regulation in the legislative level, which is kind of like mind-blowing, because if you look back at since World War II, there has been 80,000 chemicals introduced into commerce since then, of which only 10% of 80,000 have been actually tested for human health. The rest are just lingering off and are causing all these illnesses that,
So the people coming up with those chemicals are coming up with them with the single objective of making a positive impact on the skin, and any other repercussions they're just not considering.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, this is a great solution for this, and this is, you know, but they're not testing it. Or even when they do test it, they're like, oh, well, it's a very small amount, so yes, it's a small amount, but you got a small amount of this one, then you got a small amount of that one, and then you got this, and then all of these together in one day, it's kind of like, okay, you got, let's see, you, for example, you got your shave cream, you got your shampoo, you got your lotion, you got your body bar, I don't know, what else do you know what I mean? So all of those things have little things in there that you're, little chemicals that you shouldn't be exposed to, but then when they're all combined, it's like a cocktail of like chemicals.
You're scaring me now.
It's pretty scary. And the whole reason why I got so, like you say, obsessed with this was because I suffered these what would you call these? What do you say when? oh my goodness!
Ailments.
Like effects, like
ailments.
Yes, I suffered from this firsthand. For a lot of years, I was like, oh my God, I used to never cramp around my period. I'm sorry, guys, but you know, I used to never cramp around my period. And when I was 20, I started cramping, and I'm like, oh dang, that's what I get for telling people, like, haha, I don't cramp, you do. But then as years passed by, you know, it started getting worse and worse. And around my 27th birthday, I remember this because I just did not want to even leave the house. Around my 27th birthday, the pains were just so bad that it had me in bed. I couldn't get up. I couldn't even walk to the bathroom sometimes because the pain would hunch me over. I would have these sweat episodes where it was just so hot and sweaty, and I don't know, it was just really bad. And so when I went to many doctors, and first doctor told me, you had cysts in your ovaries, and they're just causing hormonal imbalance. Next doctor tells me that I have endometriosis, and that I was born this way, and that it was genetics, and there's nothing I can do to cure it. And so I'm like, great. Well, one of the things that happens when you have endometriosis is you can't have babies. And I want babies, you know, so it made me really sad, and so then came depression. Well, with a little bit of research and guidance from other endo warriors, what I like to call, there's a lot of things that you can do to help your pain without taking painkillers and birth control, and definitely for prevention. And when I started digging deeper, I realized, wow, so some of these chemicals that are making my endometriosis worse are in my beauty products. And they're in things that I had been using throughout my life. And mind you, it started when I was 20, and it's only started getting worse and worse as I aged because it started accumulating in my body, you know?
Wow. So that was a major life change for you.
Yes.
Then.
And ever since that, I'm like, oh yeah, I will not use anything in my practice that will harm my clients. Even if it's just a little dose of a little something, I just won't.
So. That's great. That's great. And that is I'm assuming that's a huge distinction as to why someone would want to come to you versus anyone else.
Yeah, it's really cool. There's a lot of people now that are starting to look more into their personal products and what they eat and what they put onto their bodies. And so those are the type of people that I attract most. You know, a lot of people are looking for a more holistic way of doing anything, really.
Right.
And so, yeah.
We're talking with Laura Gomez. As I always introduce Laura, because she's just such a dear friend and one of my mentees. I like to mentor people in business, and Laura is one of those. To talk about some of the services that you offer.
Because,
you know, there's a lot of people that don't know what an esthetician does.
So an esthetician, it takes care of the skin, but anything also that involves the skin, which means hair sits on your skin. So I also get to remove that. Get to remove the hair.
Talk about, see, I'm obsessed with business referrals and connecting people. You're obsessed with removing blackheads.
I love removing blackheads and hair from people's bodies.
Provided that they want that hair removed, right?
It's like, you know, you just hear it, and they're like, whoa, their face.
Right.
Lovely.
Yeah, well, we all saw the 40-year-old virgin and that
it's
scene.
It's not that painful, actually. It really is not. Well, he did have a lot of hair, sorry.
Right.
So I do waxing services, I do facials, and I also do makeup. And with my makeup, it's also the same. I use very clean products. Products that are long-lasting, but very safe as well. And then lash extensions. Lash extensions are one of the ones that I didn't know I would do, but they're, again, I love to do things. I'm a perfectionist.
And you're not talking about gluing on something that's in a box with one strip of glue, it goes all the way across and you slap it on, right?
Nope.
That's actually old school. That's like the 50s.
Those are lash strips. I do those too. I apply those during the makeup session. So I do those, but I also have the individual lash extensions. Those take about 2.5 hours for a full set. And they last about 3 weeks. And you just look like you just are flirting all the time. It's lovely. But those are really nice too. I got into those because I was seeing a lot of really bad work. And so my clients were coming to me and they had damaging lashes. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to offer this service and I'm going to do it right. How I know how to do it right. So I started offering them, and I have a lot of clients that come to me just for that too. So that's really cool. And
they can find you at Poetic Beauty.
They can find me at poeticbeauty.love. Yes.
.love, not .com. Poeticbeauty.love. Yes. And tell us a little about why that is your name.
Well, poetic really, I mean, it kind of just stems from how everything came together, you know, how I wanted to be a doctor and then didn't end up being a doctor, ended up being a skin therapist, and then had endometriosis, and how I was already a skin therapist and all of the stuff that I was already using was affecting me. And so it kind of just, it's more of like my life.
Yeah, all of that makes it, that kind of like the quintessential poetic, because we talk about poetic justice,
right?
In that context, and so to make it poetic beauty is just perfect.
Yes,
and without the history and the knowing of you and what you've been through, the poeticbeauty.love website kind of makes people wonder. But now it's like, I get it.
The dot love, really, I mean, you have to love yourself. You have to, I mean, the reason why I even changed all my habits was for myself, because I started loving myself, and I was like, well, I don't want to use anything that's harming me, you know? So, yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you. Laura Gomez, poeticbeauty.love, and she also does eyebrows.
Yes.
Yes, you talked about
lashes. I'm the eyebrow queen, actually. There's no one ever, ever can give you better eyebrows than I can.
If you only had more confidence. Well, Laura, thank you very much for helping me launch my very first show talking about business. I love to do that, and I love to be your mentor. I also love to do activities here in the community. A couple of the ones that I'm really excited about coming up are Blues, Brews, and Barbecue. That's coming up on the 25th of August. I hope to see a bunch of people there. I'm looking really forward to the Safeway Open. That's always a good time, and going to be seeing Bad Company. Paul Rogers, the original lead singer for Bad Company, is going to be out there. And then my wife and my favorite event of the year is the Napa Valley Film Festival, and that's coming up in November. We're big movie buffs. We love watching movies I like to say proactively. We don't just sit back and be entertained, although there is that viewing of TV where you're just vegging, but we really like to watch film and dive into the directing, and we notice really cool creative direction, camera shots, and appreciate good dialogue and things like that. So that's always cool. And there's an event coming up that I want to give a little shout out to. It's the Mad Firkin Fest. That's F-E-R-K-I-N. Mad Firkin Fest by Mad Fritz Brewing Company. It's coming up, when is this? On August 3rd. And it's going to be benefiting the Bale Grist Mill Historic State Park. My friend Rebecca Koch is putting that event on. And if you like beer and you want to do something good for the community, check out Firkin Fest, F-E-R-K-I-N. So what are you going to be doing this weekend?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Probably work.
Probably work. All yeah. Well, especially now because you've been on the radio, and you know, there's probably your inbox is filling up left and right.
Oh yeah,
as
I'm
we
getting
speak.
Famous. Uh-huh.
Yes. Let's see. What else can we talk about, Laura? Radio silence. That's always the thing that you don't want to have happen. So.
I just had my celery juice this morning.
You made celery juice.
I had celery juice this morning.
Did you rub it on your skin?
No, actually, you drink it, but it's really good for your skin.
Yeah. Interesting.
I have been on day 4. I do it all the time. I've been doing it for 2 years, and it's one of the things that got me really cleaned up after I got diagnosed with endometriosis.
Wait, 2 years and day 4. Don't
quit. 2 years. I started 2 years ago with a celery juice cleanse, and you do it for about 14 to 30 days, and you do it about maybe every 3 months or so. So I'm on the second celery cleanse of the year, and I'm on day 4. And you feel really good. It cleanses your liver.
I bet you I would feel
liver.
Really hungry.
Huh?
I would probably feel really hungry.
After a celery juice? Or well, with the celery yeah, juice? Do you like celery?
I love celery.
Oh, my God. Then you'll like celery juice. I hate celery juice. I have to close my nose like this and then chug it as fast as I can, a whole 12 ounce.
There's got to be a better way. But, hey, if it works for you, it works for you. So.
Yeah, it works. It works really good. Daisy's actually just did it the first time this month, and she's feeling more energy, and she's not as tired and groggy, and so.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we've still got 5 more minutes, and I didn't plan very well, so that's something I need to get a little better at doing this little gig here. I'm going to be here every week from 9 to 10 on Wednesdays. I've got a number of business people lined up. I've got a contractor coming in. I've got Bernie Narvaez, our sponsor, coming in. He's going to be a regular because both Bernie and I are real big about helping businesses do business, you know, connect with the local community.
I like Bernie.
Bernie's a good dude,
yeah.
Isn't he? Yeah. And it's so important that we as local citizens do business with local business owners.
Right.
I had this little fantasy that if, and there's just no way that this would ever happen, but just hypothetically, everybody stopped going to the local Home Depot here, and how long might it take for local hardware stores to return and be like it was back in the old days?
Yeah, like Central Valley, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or any business that, you know, there's just so many businesses that are now the big conglomerates. And, you know, we like our Safeway and we like our Lucky and our Raley's, but I miss the little market that was down the corner.
No, I agree.
Yeah. And
yeah,
those days are probably just never coming back. So, and my wife and I are catching ourselves about ready to place an order on Amazon and then go, nah, we should do that locally. She made a lasagna the other night for a big dinner that we had. A great dinner. We opened 31 bottles of wine, 23 people.
Oh, wow.
We didn't drink all of them, but my friend is really obsessed with wine, like I'm obsessed with networking and connecting people. And he has a bunch of old bottles of wine. And we had everything from 1971 something or other. And I, you know, I'm a wine enthusiast. I don't know a whole lot about it. I know what I like, and I enjoy that. But beyond that, so I can't even remember where I was going with that story.
I love it. We just love wine. And right. You didn't invite me to this.
No.
That's where we were going with that.
Oh, that's, yeah. You were about to make me feel guilty for not inviting you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Will just popped into the studio, and we're about ready to wrap up, Will. I need you to tell me which buttons to push and where to go next. So those out in Radio Land, thank you for listening and bear with me as I learn all the controls. When I was on the radio before, Desi Kapaz did all of the brains. I just talked, and it's just weird being here, not knowing what buttons to push and where to go. And so your concentration level is definitely quite distracted. So thanks again, Laura, for being here. Check her out at poeticbeauty.love.
Thank you.
And
thank you so
we'll
much.
See everybody. Well, you won't see us because we got faces for radio. But we'll see you or hear. You'll hear us next week.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.